Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, the Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Susan, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, April 9th, 2026, and we're reading from the Big Book, and we're starting the chapter More About Alcoholism this morning. Page 30, the first paragraph. Most of us have been unwilling through to many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. Today's readers are Vanessa G, who will read the text, Cara L, A Vision for You, and Shelley E is our backup. Alex K is our newcomer greeter, and Leslie M will share announcements. The reference numbers for Wednesday, April 8th, 10 a.m. Eastern is 23,350. And for Thursday, April 9th, 7 a.m. Eastern is 23,352. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I will now ask Lisa W. in Denver, Colorado, to please read the 12 steps of OA for us. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. One. We admitted we were powerless over compulsive eating and that our life had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry it out. Four, made a searching and for fearless moral inventory. Just a second. I'm sorry, I lost my place here. Here we go, sorry. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in our affairs.
Thank you, Lisa. I will now ask Beth F. in California to please read the 12 traditions of OA. Good morning, Beth.
Thank you. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Less problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Beth. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we're going to resume our study of the Big Book. We are starting the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 30. And we are going to read and comment on the first paragraph, starting with, most of us have been unwilling to admit through to into the gates of insanity or death. And I will now invite Vanessa G. in New Mexico to please start reading and sharing with us. Good morning, Vanessa.
Good morning, Susan. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. My name's Vanessa G. I am a real compulsive overeater, recovered in New Mexico. And this is the beginning of Chapter 3, More About Alcoholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. Unwilling to admit that we were real alcoholics, mentally different, countless vain attempts, the great obsession, abnormal drinker, disillusion, pursuing insanity and death, the delusion, every form of self-deception and experimentation, victim to a belief, puzzled and humiliated, the peculiar mental twist, helpless, gone beyond recall, utter inability, desperate experiment, nervous disposition, not being any too smart, foolish idea, plain insanity, a lack of proportion, a lack of ability to think straight, curious mental phenomenon, insanely trivial excuse, the insane idea, insanely insufficient justification, little spurious or effective thought, absurd and incomprehensible, foolish, having queer ideas of fun, crazy, strangely insane, subtle insanity, not thought of the consequences, an alcoholic mind, strange mental blank spots, alcoholic mentality, hopeless condition, 100% hopeless, no effective mental defense. This chapter does everything it can to convince us that the crux of our disease is not in our body, although we do have an abnormal reaction in our body, that the crux of the disease is in our mind. We are insane when it comes to food. They did not use the word denial back in the day, but you know, this really punctured my denial when I read it the first time. And I often have my sponsees go through this chapter and find all the ways that they describe the insanity that accompanies the alcoholic mind, that lives in the alcoholic mind. The insanity that can only be healed by a spiritual experience. The insanity that got me so close to death and definitely into an insane place of just not knowing what the truth or the false, you know, what was true and what was false any longer. I'm so grateful to have found this program. This program clears up my mind because I have a relationship with a higher power. And I really appreciate the opportunity to share on this chapter. This is the chapter that punctured my insanity. My denial gave me that moment of clarity and put me on the road to recovery. Thank you so much.
Perfect timing. Thank you so much, Vanessa G. in New Mexico. All right, so if you came in while Vanessa was speaking, we read and she commented on the first paragraph in Chapter 3, More About Alcoholism, page 30. Most of us have been willing to admit through to Into the Gates of Insanity or Death. Although we value your experience, we ask that you please limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So if this is your third day on EVA Vision Meeting, star one, unmute, please give me your first name, last initial, and where you are calling from, which is how people can also find you on the member list. Who would like to share this morning? Thank you, Freya.
Tina W.
Who was that W?
Tina W.
Tina. Okay, and Tina, where are you from?
South Jersey.
Thank you.
Nancy L., Arizona.
Thank you, Nancy.
Hillary B., California.
Thank you. Come on, who else? This is a fabulous paragraph. Don't want to wait to the last minute when we run out.
Jennifer P.
Thank you, Jennifer. And there was a gentleman who came in with Jennifer.
Marty F., California.
Thank you, Marty.
Larry G., California.
Thank you, Larry.
Mary Frances W., Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Mary Frances.
Wendy M.
Thank you, Wendy. Thank you. I've got you. All right. When I said we might run out of time, everybody woke up. All right. I have Freya H. in Colorado, Tina W. in South Jersey, got Nancy L., Hillary B., Jennifer P., Marty F., Larry G., Mary Frances W., and Wendy M. Freya, start us off, and if everybody else could mute their lines. Thank you so much.
Amazing. Thank you, Susan. This is Freya H., very grateful, recovered compulsive eater, bulimic restrictor in Colorado. Thank you to our opening reader and sharer for that awesome introduction and overview of what this chapter holds for us. A lot of really strong language. And coming to this paragraph, the line that I wanted to comment on is, let's see, the idea that somehow, someday, I will control and enjoy my eating is the great obsession of every abnormal eater. So the way that I read this is actually telling us another symptom of our disease. It's telling us that if you have had the obsession about controlling, how to control and enjoy it, then you probably have this condition. And I absolutely identify with that. Maybe I can't identify with being extremely overweight or some of the other stories that I hear in here, but have I been obsessed with trying to control and enjoy my food consumption? Yes. As a young kid, I noticed food did something for me, but I also got a very strong message, you're not supposed to overindulge in food. So from a very, very young age, I knew I was supposed to control it. And so that managing game of how do I control it and enjoy it, you know, how do I enjoy it because it's doing something for me, but knowing that I need to control it, and that those two things are usually at odds with one another. You know, if I'm controlling it, then I can't really be enjoying it. And when I'm enjoying it, well, shoot, I'm, you know, then I have to go through, you know, for what me became bulimia, because like, well, now I need to control it. So no wonder that like bulimia and restriction and using exercise all presented themselves as solutions in my life, because they were my attempts to control and enjoy my food. And so I know that this line, you know, that I have this obsession, and that it really has nothing to do with my physical body. You know, I thought that, oh, if I were at a certain weight or a certain place in my life, or I had that boyfriend, or I had that group of friends, or, you know, my life looked like this, then this stuff wouldn't bother me anymore. And that there's nothing further from the truth. In fact, when I had all that stuff, I was more obsessed with myself and more obsessed with my body than ever. So I need a real solution. And in order to really grasp why I need that solution, this chapter is telling me more about, it's revealing the true nature of this disease so that I can understand why the solution is what it is. So I'll stay tuned and then look forward to hearing everybody else. I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Freya H. in Colorado. Next, we have Tina W. in South Jersey. Good morning, Tina. Tina, star one to unmute. I know you're probably trying to. All right, I'm going to go to Nancy L. in Arizona, and Tina, I'll come back to you.
I'm so sorry.
Tina, is that you? Okay, go ahead.
Sorry. I'm a grateful compulsive overeater and food addict. I was in the rooms for 20 years. I never left, but I didn't hear the clear-cut directions, or I should say I didn't want to hear them, because I'm an addict and I want to hang on to my food. So it was when I was in the ring with next to a knockout punch that was going to keep me down, and I knew it, I had to start looking around at the audience and saying, what's really going on here? Who am I fighting? And I was fighting myself and my own vision of myself that I'd had since I was a small child, because self cannot reveal self to self. And I was willing, because I was going to die, to say, hey, can somebody tell me what's going on here? So psychiatrists have studied us. They still study us. We're 10% of the population. I don't have an inner compass that tells me true from false. And when I first was willing to do all this after 20 years, I'm like, you know, I have a full-time job. I pay my bills. I have a mortgage. I have kids. You're going to tell me I don't know the truth from the false? That I can't count on my own perspective of life and reality? And even then, when I was out for the count, I said, okay, I'll do what you say. I'll put all the food down. I'll do what you say. And things like, you know, I thought a little licky here and there, you know, just a bottle, you know, just a little bit could make me drunk enough to not see reality. Yes, that's enough. You know, so I did what they said, and I had the spiritual experience. But this is the type of thing I'm not going to see on Oprah or Dr. Phil. It's not in the DSM. I'm a logical person. I believe in scientific evidence. But this is a special spiritual connection to our loving creator that can only be made real to us by ourselves. It's an outreach from the one and only, the creator of my life, given to me by others who have the same experience as me. And that takes humility. And that's something that I didn't have. I had a very big ego. I still do. And my ego has recuperative powers and it can come back. So I'm very afraid that it could come back. I'm now 5 years and 2 months abstinent. My life has changed fast. I mean, it was a train going about 2 miles an hour. Now it's going about 50 miles an hour, and I'm in for the ride, because now I'm discovering the truth about myself and the truth about life. And with that comes the revelation of happiness and the lack of fear and being courageous enough to lean on my creator. So with that, I'll pass. Sorry about the glitch on my phone. Thank you.
No problem. Happens to all of us. Next, we have Nancy L. in Arizona. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Susan. Good morning, everyone. Nancy, recovered in Arizona.
Wow, what a powerful paragraph. Countless vain attempts. That was me. You know, I didn't really think I was different than anybody until junior high. And all of a sudden I realized, wow, I can't wear the clothes they wear. I can't have the boyfriends they have. I don't go to any of the dances that they go to. And that's when my countless vain attempts started and failed every time. The dieting and exercise, et cetera, it never worked. One time when I was like about 25, I asked my best friend who I'd known since junior high, and she's always been thin. I said, what do you do when you get upset? What do you do? And she said, oh, I go pet my dog. And I thought to myself, wow, I wish I had a dog, you know? Anyway, I was always looking for something on the external, never about the deep, dark secret inside my heart and the disease. I just couldn't hardly believe that I actually couldn't do anything about it. I was always struggling and trying. And, you know, I think what woke me up was when I really started to think about ending my life. It scared me, really, really scared me, because as a mom, wife, I can't leave my life, take my life. And so anyway, thank God I found OA. I've been abstinent for about 5 years. I've been in program since 2002. So I did a lot of, you know, messing around the first 12 years, not paying attention and really taking this thing seriously. My doctor says, Nancy, your heart loves your weight. And I am so very, very grateful. I'm a whole lot older now, but I still got this disease. And one day at a time, by God's grace and mercy, I'm not overeating. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nancy L. in Arizona. Next, we have Hillary B. in California. Good morning, Hillary.
Good morning, everyone.
Did you call?
Go
this
ahead, Hillary.
Hillary B. Okay, thank you. Thank you for your service, Susan. And thank you, all of you who shared. I mean, I am one who was, for a very long time, totally unwilling to admit the truth about myself. And I was in OA a very long time. I have been in OA a very long time. And it's still, I would say, well, I just have a little food problem. I know I'm a compulsive overeater. Every single one of my siblings is a compulsive overeater. My parents, my mother was anorexic, bulimic. My dad was fat obsessed. We couldn't avoid it, plus whatever genetic thing there is. And I knew somehow, someday, I will control and enjoy my eating. That was my great obsession. I need a way, but I don't need it the way everyone else needs it. That's how I saw it. I'm not really that overweight. Like, that was the whole problem right there. That if I'm not that overweight, then I don't have this disease. And but I got to a very, very low point finally in my late 60s. I was 30 when I came in. And I had to finally admit, I'm a real compulsive overeater. There's nothing I can do about it. I gained more weight than I had ever gained, but the worst thing was that I was just so miserable. The world was a very dark place to me. And I'm so grateful now. I have such a good life, but nothing has changed on the outside. I have the same life that made me that I was miserable living in before. And now I'm grateful and happy in the life I'm living, which is the same life on the outside as it was before. That's the miracle of recovery that I want to convey to you. And abstinence is only the beginning. It's not a step. It's a tool. I heard a couple people share that on this meeting. It's a tool, abstinence, so that I can work the steps and have a spiritual awakening that, number one, enables me to be abstinent and not be miserable, but to be happy in abstinence. And number two, the spiritual awakening gives me joy for all the gifts I have in my life that I was unable to see before. I wasn't able to see the gifts because I could only see all the things I don't like, all the things that I blame for making me miserable. And I had to eat. I had to eat. What else could I do? I had to take that pain away.
That's time.
And thank you so much for timing in my path.
Thank you. All right, next we're going to go back to the East Coast. Good morning to Jennifer P.
Hi, good morning, Susan. Good morning, everyone. Jennifer P., grateful, covered compulsive overeater that I can live in the solution today. You know, this chapter says more about alcoholism. So that's what I'm like finding this chapter to be. What do I need to know about alcoholism? And I think that, you know, when I first came in 30 years ago, I was in OA meetings, and then I went to some meetings that were AA meetings, and I found I could relate. I could identify into the book because the way that people describe drinking in the big book is the way I ate. My sponsor had me do like the third step where I personalized it in the I. And when I look at this in terms of page 30, like I can say most, I have been unwilling to admit.
You can eat in front of the TV today.
I don't like to think.
Everyone,
because I want to show you that I'm really sorry.
Hillary, can you mute yourself?
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I don't like to think that I'm bodily and mentally different. I've had countless vain attempts, you know, and so that is, I just identify so much with that. And also, you know, I'm in a study now that the speaker's reminding like me of like my willpower is defective, like it will always choose me. So I can't rely on my willpower. Self-knowledge isn't going to help me. I can, and death to my false self is where I need to really hit the bottom. But I'm not supposed to feel good in the first step when I'm learning about this. I'm getting ready to be gifted, as someone said to me, you know, getting ready to be gifted with partnership with my managing partner, then I can recover. So I am really, 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 really grateful for this book, for the description, for the power behind the words that describes me. And I'm just grateful for that there is a solution. These are the steps. And I have to fully concede to my innermost self. No one else can do that for me. I have to. And by the grace of God, one day at a time, God can show me that this is that I can fully concede. This is who I am. But by grace, there is a solution. And all of you wonderful people are part of the tribe that has helped me to be where I am now, almost 30 years later. Thank you so much. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. Next, we have Marty F. in California. Good morning, Marty. Marty, star one to unmute. Right. I'm going to go
good
to
morning.
Larry G. Oh, okay. Go ahead, Marty. All right.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I couldn't get that undone. So, Marty F., a compulsive overeater. I've been in OA, unfortunately, I don't know how long. I've been in for at least a couple of years now. And, you know, really grateful for OA and the meetings I go to and getting online and the real gift of hearing each of you that have been doing this for a long time and have been absent for a long time. My current absence has been March 19th, and even though I've been in OA for a while, it's been a struggle. I have had a relationship with my God for 40 years, and that's done a lot of things in me. But over a period of time, as things sort of slipped and became hard in life, I turned to my idol of comfort, which was food, thinking that that's, you know, because it's not like alcohol or drugs, it's, you know, per se illegal or causing problems in society. I was causing problems to myself. And so, having gone through a stint in 2019, and, you know, family and friends, and then me just looking in the mirror and going, you know, what happened? And it, I just feel like it was a slow process, and partly was, it was also being fast. And it seemed, it has been very hard to get it off in regards to the fact that I have lived in quite a bit of denial with many things, and God has really been working on me to really be in Him and present in Him and listening to Him and finding that peace. And that, listening to you guys and, you know, confessing this and talking about this on the phone and even at my meetings face-to-face, it has continued to, and even as we're going along here, I'm praying about, you know, what do I do? God, what do I do next? How do I look at this?
That's
how do
fine,
I see
Marcy.
With similar? Okay, and thank you guys very much for letting me speak. I pass.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Next, we have Larry G. in California. And if everybody can remember to star one and remute themselves after they share. Thank you. Go ahead, Larry.
Thank you, Susan G. from California. Appreciate your service. Oh, and we're going to read a little further on another way of describing the countless vain attempts as jaywalkers. And I am the jaywalker. I still am the jaywalker. Jaywalker is part of my alcoholism, and I have to work on that every single day. This is just my observation. May not be true for you, but the 20 years before I came to A Vision for You, I believe that we do a disservice because we don't spend enough time on the problem. If I don't know what the problem is, then I'm not going to heal. You know, doctors are not going to prescribe a treatment plan without thoroughly examination of where the problem is. But yet, I did not really know what the problem. I know the problem is an alcoholic. You can go to any AA meeting, and they're going to talk about the doctor's opinion that the problem is in the mind. I had this full little way that I would take myself off the hook by saying, I'm an emotional eater, and once in a while I need my comfort food to regulate that. That's a lie that I told myself. It was a convenient lie. It helped me to keep coming back and eat my alcoholic foods, but it's a lie. And so as a sponsor today, because the gift was given to me when I came to A Vision for You by Rachel Kay, we spent most of our time so that I understood what the problem was. I had to reprogram my thinking because I came from a place where my feelings was a problem. If that's true, then all I have to do is go to a therapist and talk about these unwanted feelings and the obsession will pass. But my thinking is the problem. And I've learned that in A Vision for You, and I really appreciate that I've learned that. We've studied this in the big book. We talk about it on the phone. Sponsors in this program really understand what the problem is, and I feel I have a duty, an obligation to the men I sponsor to really hone in on this and talk about this and make sure that my sponsees understand, because I can't get well. I cannot get well if I believe that it was my family of origin, or I had a tough day, or I have an uncommunicative wife, or a micromanaged boss. And wrap my recovery story around that. That's what I did, you know. And yeah, it brought me to the gates of insanity. And today, sanity has been restored. The second step does work, ladies and gentlemen. Those of you who are new in this call,
time,
the second step does work. And with that, I'm going to shut up. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Next, we have Mary Frances W. in Pennsylvania. Good morning.
Good morning, Susan. Good morning, everybody. And thank you for your service. This is Mary Frances W., recovered in Pennsylvania. And I've said on this line before how long I've been in the program, 43 years. I'm now 70. And I read this book many times, and somehow I never really understood or took into my being. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. All the relapses throughout the years, there was still that deep denial that I could go out there and have a little bit of this or a little bit of that. It wouldn't hurt me. And no, it didn't in the beginning. But then that's cumulative. And after a while, I couldn't stop. And I'm not saying that's everyone's experience, but that was my experience. And so my brain tricked me into believing that I could have a little bit. But my brain didn't tell me that I was a real compulsive overeater. And this time, through the grace of God, I've been able to admit my innermost being that I am a real compulsive overeater. This is the cleanest abstinence I've ever experienced in my 43 years. And with God's help, I'm not willing today to take the risk of putting something in my mouth if I don't know what's in it before I would take a chance. Oh, it's just salad dressing. I can have it. Or, you know, it's just a little bit. Or it's a sugar-free cough drop. Or, you know, it's no sugar added ice cream. And that is no more. And I thank God for that because I didn't think it was possible. But being on this line and being with all of you and relying on God has taught me that it is possible. It's a miracle, but I can't do it on my own. I always thought I could do it on my own, but I can't. Someone mentioned ego and humility. It takes a lot of that humility for me to finally admit my innermost self that I'm a real alcoholic and so or compulsive overeater. And I'm so grateful that God brought me to this point and is one day at a time continuing to help me be abstinent. I got through the steps in 4 months, which I haven't gotten through steps past step four in a lot of years. So this program works. Don't give up. Keep coming back. The people on this line are truly invested in this program and the big book. And I agree with the previous speaker about step one. And with that, I'll pass.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Next, we're going to Boulder, Colorado. Good morning, Wendy M.
Good morning, Susan G. Thank you for your service and all the shares on the line. And I'm in Boulder, Colorado. I'm a compulsive overeater. I love this chapter. This book is divinely inspired, no question. And I call it not just more about alcoholism, but more about thinking. And not just more about thinking, but more about lying, right? And that's what I love about this chapter. It shows me all the ways that I lie. And why do I lie? Because I want to control and enjoy everything. My food, all of my defects of character, right? I want to minimize everything so that I get what I want. I say, like, often I'll say, I lie to get the hit, right? So just as an example, well, I want to say another thing is, as an addict, I love loopholes. I love vague. I love, what can I get away with? Like, you know, and the thinking, right? My voice, it's in my voice, so it sounds right. That sounds right. That's a good idea, right? So, you know, things like it's in a salad bowl, so it's a salad, no matter what's in it, right? Or putting ice cream in my coffee and calling it cream. I will do anything, right, to control and enjoy this thing. Like, the illusion will send me to the gates of hell, of course. And here's the thing. I know when I'm lying, right? I was in Hawaii. This is how I broke my abstinence. And I had a big old salad, and there was salad dressing, and I didn't ask about it, right? It was like, no, you know what? I'm in Hawaii. It doesn't count. I mean, I will think of anything. One of my favorites is I'm on a plane and we're 4 hours difference than Hawaii. So maybe, just maybe, when I land, I get one more meal. Like, I'll do anything to control and enjoy it, right? And what I was going to say is, I know when I'm lying, people. This is not rocket science, right? Another thing I love to do is weigh and measure in my head. Like, I can weigh and measure that in my head. We're good to go, right? So what is this book about? What is this program about? It's about ego reduction. It's about telling the truth, you know? When I tell my sponsor the truth, I get relief. Oh, my God, I get to get out of the way. I no longer control and enjoy my deception. When I'm lying, it's uncomfortable. I've got to course correct. I must. And that's how I get God. When I'm out of sync and I'm lying, basically lying to my sponsor, lying to myself, it doesn't matter. I'm out of sync with God. And here's the deal. I love connecting with God. It feels itchy and scratchy when I'm lying about anything, including food. And it feels phenomenal when I get to God. When I call you guys and say, you know what? I'm overeating at night and I need to tell somebody at some point, right? That's the relief that we get when we surrender, when we get out of the ego and we tell somebody the truth about what we're actually
that
doing.
Time.
And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Wendy. All right. We probably have time for a couple more shares, maybe three. So as a reminder, we value your experience greatly, but we ask that you please limit your share to every third day. And we read and are commenting on the first paragraph on page 30 and more about alcoholism. Who would like to share this morning?
Regina V. from California.
Thank you, Regina. Who would like
Bruce
to join Regina?
Me.
Thank you, Bruce. And I'll take one more name, but no guarantee we'll have time.
Lucinda F. in Austin, Texas.
Great, thank you. All right, so let's start with Regina and see where we go. Thank you, Regina.
Thank you. My name is Regina, and I'm a compulsive overeater and sugar addict. And I'm so grateful I can say those words because it took me a long time to admit that, you know, I was a compulsive overeater. And I've realized since I've been in OA and another food program before OA that for me, it's important to weigh and measure because I will every single time overeat, you know, and yesterday was a perfect example. So I'm not recovered, but I know that not yet, you know, I like to say yet because it will happen. I believe that. I really want to, you know, work the steps and get recovered. But perfect example, yesterday I ordered a meal and I knew I was already, you know, very satisfied. And it was a healthy meal, mind you, it was a very healthy meal. But what did Regina do? She just could not put that food away, you know, and it wasn't measured. And so I had to finish everything that, you know, was on my plate, even though I was satisfied halfway through the meal. I said, this is delicious, and I'm going to eat it all. And a normal person would have pushed that food away. I'm not normal. I'm abnormal. And I noticed that yesterday. And I said, if I had had my vegetables with me, I would have put, you know, not eaten half of it. I would have had another meal the next day with that food. But I didn't have my vegetables and I decided to go for it. And even like when I was ready to go to bed, 9 o'clock, the meal was like at 6. I was still very, very full. And it's just been a long, hard journey of me having such a difficult time thinking that I'm like everybody else, you know? And I did a lot of restricting, a lot of exercise, a lot of diets, a lot of, you know, I used to eat very healthy during the day
And then at night I'd have a slice of Dave's Killer Bread with almond butter and lots of honey and a glass of milk. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't lose any weight. And I said, all day long I'm eating healthy. But, you know, I had to have my sugar fix. And this was right before I went to bed. Right before I closed my eyes, I would have the bread with the almond butter, the honey, the milk. And if I went to a party, I would indulge in the desserts.
That's time.
I went. Thank you for letting me share. So happy to hear all of your shares.
Thank you, Regina. Next, we have Bruce E. in, I believe it's South Florida. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yep. I'm in not only in South Florida, I'm in Southwest Florida. Thank you. This is Bruce E., and I'm a recovering food addict. And, well, this paragraph's got my name written on it, all over it. And I am very grateful to be here and very grateful that I can say I am a real food addict. I absolutely am. And it actually brings into other areas of my life. I mean, other addictions too, but boy, this is my top plate right here. And I'm not a bad person trying to get better. I'm just absolutely a sick person trying to get well. I am sick, you know, and I'm a real food addict. And bodily and mentally, you know, I think Silkworth mentions that at the beginning of, or sometime in Doctor's Opinion, that we're bodily, or at the beginning of Doctor's Opinion, we're bodily and mentally sick. And then later on, he says that the problem's really in the mind, either he else says that problem's really in the mind. And, you know, main problem is in the mind. But I'm a sick person, bodily and mentally. And, you know, I've had, that's why, I guess why he says countless vain attempts to prove he could eat like other people. The countless means you can't count them all. And I can't count all the times that I've tried to prove to myself, not other people, but to myself, that I can eat like other people, that take three desserts or whatever, you know, or any desserts or whatever, you know, three plates of this or whatever, you know. I've tried that and tried that, and it didn't work. And the pain of overeating, the pain of cheating on the food plan, the pain of taking too much, the pain of fudging things, that all brings me back to the program. You know, it's the pain of this thing, because it's so painful to be into this food. And I've always thought, I still think that every now and then I get this idea, somehow, someday I'll be able to, you know, someday, somehow I'll be able to go in a grocery store and buy every sugar item in the whole store, go out in the car and eat it, you know, somehow, someday. But no, that thinking has to get, I have to get rid of that thinking.
That's time, Bruce.
Yeah, it brings it even on insanity or death. Thank you, I pass.
Thank you. And Lucinda, you and I will both share tomorrow because we are out of time. All right. Thank you, Team Thursday, for the month of April. Vanessa G., Cara L., Shelley E., Lisa W., Beth F., please stay on with Alex K. and Leslie M., especially if you need a sponsor or are an available sponsor. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Cara L. in California, will you please read A Vision for You for us? Thank you.
Good morning, this is Cara L., recovered compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize new only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you, and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. Answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. and in yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Throw away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. God bless you and keep you until then.